Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's summer, and we have been battered by severe storms, as we seem to be every summer. For the past couple of months, we've had some bad weather. In the newsroom, we're always keyed into weather alerts, and we get alerts all the time for a vast area that we cover, and it seems like there's a tornado watch every other day in central, and I'm sure that's not the case. We're just focused in on it. In central New York, a tornado in early July killed four people, caused millions in damage. Another tornado in the capital region in June, and a very rare tornado at the end of July in the Boston area also caused damage in that region. We may see some severe weather before the summer's end. It's a fair bet. Today on the show, National Weather Service Warning Coordination Meteorologist Steve DiRienzo joins us to answer your weather-related questions. He deals with plans, procedures, and other operations out of the NOAA office here in Albany. It's his job to make sure people are prepared for storms and severe weather. So if you have a question about storms or the weather in general, we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, and you can get in touch with us online. You can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. You can post to our Facebook page. We have a wall post for Vox Pop at WAMC Radio. You can post your questions and comments on the Vox Pop show page at our website, wamc.org/voxpop. You can tweet us, too, WAMC Vox Pop, if you want. But the phone is always good, 1-800-348-2551. Steve DiRienzo, nice to have you here.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks for having me.
As I was reading the open, and I talked about how in our newsroom, it seems like we get a weather alert every day. You winced. I saw you wince, and it's not the case. But remember, when we, in our newsroom, we're covering from Canadian border down into Westchester, over to Utica, out to Springfield and Worcester. And so it's a big area. So we're always getting weather alerts. So I don't want to be a weather alarmist here, but it's been a fairly average summer as far as weather.
I think temperature-wise, it's been average. It's been nice. It hasn't been too hot. But storm-wise, there's been quite a few thunderstorms.
Yeah, more than usual?
I'd have to look at the exact numbers, but we definitely have had our share of severe weather this year.
What is it that you really focus on at your job?
Trying to make sure that people are prepared for severe weather, all types of severe weather. Make sure people understand what kind of weather is possible in this part of the world.
Yep.
I mean, we have a lot of transient people. People move all over for work nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
And just make sure that everybody understands what can happen, and then make sure they're ready as they go about their daily business to take action when something bad could happen.
So, in other words, when a hurricane, when a Sandy comes our way, you head to the bunker and over in all at the West Albany campus and take it from there.
Well, right. I mean, I do help out with New York State at their State Operations Center, the Emergency Operations Center, but also our office. We are located on the SUNY Albany campus, and the scrolls you see on your TV when weather warnings go out, they emanate from our office over on campus.
Let me ask you about those weather alerts you see on TV. They're very precise. So it might say the National Weather Service has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for X location until 3:21 p.m. It's very precise. How do you do that?
Well, we have some pretty sophisticated software that takes the radar data, figures out which way the thunderstorm is moving, and then maps it out over a period of time, maybe up to 60 minutes, no more than 60 minutes, and just figures out what towns are in the path. We call that a path cast, and basically just issue the warning for the towns that are in the path of the storm.
You know, as I mentioned earlier, in the newsroom we hear every weather alert, and so tornadoes have been much on our lips in the newsroom. Has, it would seem, the perception is, and the people you talk to on the street, oh, more and more tornadoes. Is that true?
I don't think so. You know, just looking back in our local area here, my forecast area covers 15 counties in New York and four in New England, Western New England. So we average two or three tornadoes per summer. We've had two in our forecast area, three confirmed so far this year. We normally get, you know, two to three a year. And tornado season is basically May, June, July, and August. So
yeah.
If we don't get another one in the next couple months, it'll be a fairly average year for us. New York State as a whole averages about 9 tornadoes per year.
It's funny how the media affects perception. So you hear a lot about tornadoes, rightly so. A lot of damage can be done. But it's funny. It seems like there are more. And I guess it's not the case. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Our guest is Steve DiRienzo. And he is the National Weather Service Warning Coordinating Meteorologist today for the it's NOAA or the National Weather Service?
The National Weather Service. We're part of NOAA and the Department of Commerce, all federal agency.
The number to call is 1-800-348-2551. We go to Tina in Ravenna. Tina in Ravenna, you're on.
Thank you. Steve, I have a question. And about a year, year and a half from now, my husband and I are going to have a home built. And I keep telling my husband we need to definitely have a real fireplace and a wood stove. He thinks that I'm hallucinating when I say to him the weather's getting worse. We need to protect ourselves in case we lose any kind of, like, heating with the gas. And he feels as though that a regular gas fireplace is more feasible than turning around and getting the real wood one. And I think he's wrong, and I think I'm right. What do you think? The way this weather is going.
Well, you know, in all honesty, I'm not a fire or a heating expert. I deal with the weather. It's certainly in the wintertime, it is possible to lose power due to ice storms.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summertime, it's possible to lose power from wind and lightning. Where I live, we usually lose power about two or three times a year in my house. I'd say on average, you know, for just a few hours, but it has been out as many as maybe 30 hours. Maybe keep the gas fireplace and get a generator. That might be the solution. But I can't tell you, you know, exactly what to do. It's everybody's personal preference.
Yeah, but the way the weather is going, I still think I'm right, that you need to look in the future.
Well, we always advocate preparedness.
Exactly.
Know what can happen. It's always possible, like I said, to get, you know, severe storms, ice storms in the winter. So you may lose power. And just, you know, always be prepared for the worst is my advice.
Yeah, because, you know, it reminds me of, Steve, when I was a kid and used to watch Alfred Hitchcock movies and you would see all these crazy things happening. In today's world, with the weather, this is really happening like this.
It's always happened. It's just that.
All right. That gets to our question about perception. Is this, as a prominent politician fond of saying, the new normal?
Everything goes in cycles from what we've seen. Here at Albany, we've got weather records that go back to the early 1800s, continuous records. And we've seen everything. I mean, there have been, if you look on a century-wide basis, the 1800s were a very wet century. The 1900s were a very dry century. We dealt with droughts. There were like six droughts that affected this part of New York during the 1900s. Now it's gotten wet again. So we have to deal with the fact that all of our infrastructure was built during the 1900s while it was dry.
Mm.
And so now that it's wet again, we're dealing with more water and it's causing problems. Things like that we have to look at. As far as, you know, tornadoes and other types of weather, we get our share. One of the things we started to do in our office is go back and look at past events and try and determine what's the worst that is possible based on past events.
And what's the worst possible based on past events?
Well, we had the ice storm in 2008.
Terrible. I lost power for 6 days.
Right. A lot of people did. So we've looked back at events that have occurred. There was a really bad ice storm in the Capital District in 1964. Schools were closed for a couple weeks. Power was out all over the place. Go back to the 1940s. The early 1940s was another significant one. The ice was actually thicker in those events than the one we had in 2008. There was less electricity, obviously, in the 1940s. The 60s was probably somewhat comparable, but probably fewer people
yeah.
as far as in the rural areas and less trees. One of the problems we have now is all the power lines go through the tree canopies alongside the
roads. So there were less trees back then?
Right. The forest is kind of taken over again.
Interesting. All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. We're talking to Steve DiRienzo today. Eric in Chalmont, you're on.
Yes. Hi. I have two quick questions. Both of them have to do with kind of perception versus actual data. My first question is, it just seems to me that storms, I live up in Western Massachusetts, storms tend to happen in the afternoon. And I wonder whether that's actually backed up by data and why that would be. And then the second question is, I moved up here from New York City. It just seems like in recent years there have been all these tornadoes, and particularly tornadoes that I don't recall from when I was a kid having tornadoes up in this part of the country. So I'm wondering, again, is that just perception or is that really backed up by data that there are more of those going on now?
Well, the first question, the reason you get more storms in the afternoon is because that's the time of maximum heating. It's the warmest time of day, and the fuel for storms is heat and moisture. So you get the most heat 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
That's why it rains in Florida every afternoon.
You got it.
Yeah.
So the tornado thing, I actually brought a map with me today here, and it shows all the tornado tracks across New York and the surrounding states since 1950. And you'd be surprised how many tornadoes there have been. Western Massachusetts had a couple of EF4 tornadoes, actually. So... it happened. Our forecast area, which covers Berkshire County, averages two or three a year. We've had years with none. We've had years with six or eight tornadoes in those 19 counties. So
perception, as we spoke of at the beginning of the show. Eric, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, our producer, with a slight smirk, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, just handed me an automated message. Says, severe thunderstorm warning for Warren and Washington counties beginning at 217 and ending at 317. And that's, there you go with that precision again. So, thunderstorm warning, Warren and Washington from now until 317.
First severe storm of the afternoon, I guess. There may be more.
And so, I guess when you were discussing being on the program this morning with Jessica and yesterday, you said, well, if the weather gets bad, I obviously can't do the show.
Well, I was thankful that one of my coworkers offered to step in and take over for me and sit at the warning desk this afternoon for an hour until I get back at 3:30. So.
All right, and we'll talk about what happens when these weather systems come in after we take a break. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. We will talk to National Weather Service Warning Coordinator Meteorologist Steve DiRienzo, and your call is coming up.
Support for WAMC goes from Dr. Joseph Cohen, optometrist. Eye examinations and classic eyewear in historic Uptown Kingston. Most insurance is accepted. Optical diversity in the Hudson Valley. CohenOptometry.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors. EmpireExhibits.com. The Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers. nature.org/Adirondacks. The Red Lion Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, offering accommodations for Berkshire travelers for over 200 years. 10 minutes from Tanglewood, redlioninn.com. And the Bee's Knees Cafe at Heather Ridge Farm, Preston Hollow, New York. 5-course farm and forage dinners, August 9th and monthly. Reservations at 518-239-6234.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Tuesday afternoon, 2:21 is the time. Ray Graff here and Steve DiRienzo right across the console here. He's a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. And so we just had our first severe thunderstorm warning of the afternoon. It is for Warren and Washington counties. It goes until 3:17 p.m. So when the severe systems come in, what happens at your place of business?
Well, we get pretty busy. We actually have a severe weather operations plan that we put into effect, and we start piecemealing work. We break up into teams that actually are the warning teams. Other people are working on up to keeping the forecasts updated. Somebody might be coordinating with the Storm Prediction Center in Norman, Oklahoma. It depends on the day, how significant the event is, and how many people we have on duty. Sometimes we're calling extra people back into the office.
When we, in the media, bandy about the term Doppler radar, I think it gets to the point that many of us never even thought about what it really is. What is Doppler radar, and why is it so important to what you guys do nowadays?
Well, it's really important because it not only shows us where the storms are, but it can actually estimate wind speed. So we know how strong the storms are, the wind gusts from the storms. We can see rotation in the storms.
So this is an easy way to spot a possible tornado?
Or spot a storm that may produce one, that's correct.
So in other words, rotation precedes there could be rotation without a tornado.
Yes.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Richard in New Baltimore. Richard, you're on.
Hey there, good afternoon, and thank you very much. And by the way, it's still only Tuesday.
And it's, what did I say, Wednesday?
No, Thursday.
I said Thursday.
Yes, but that's all right.
You know what?
I'm
going on vacation next week. My mind is obviously pushing things ahead. It's Rich Guthrie, boys and
thinking
girls.
Thinking ahead.
Hi,
I love
Rich.
It.
You're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Hey, right on topic here, because I like to follow Doppler radar for, among other things. It helps keep track of migrating birds. But one thing that does come up when looking at the Doppler radar, I'm looking at severe storms and tracking storms, mainly for what I want to know when not to be outdoors. But the other thing is I see the labeling of them, and there seems to be some sort of a coding system in labeling that I haven't been able to figure out. just out of curiosity, the numbered lettered number sequence, and I'm not sure who assigns them and what formula they use for assigning those numbers. If you can explain that.
I'm not exactly sure which numbers you mean. Do you mean the site identifier for the radar itself, or
No. The particular storms themselves. I'm looking at the screen right now, as it happens, and they're labeled B as in Bravo, zero, S zero, N as in Nancy zero, P zero, and these are various storms with the DBZs and the elevations and the speed and direction. This is all on the Albany's NEXRAD radar station, ENX.
Okay. I think we have some software that will actually just number the storms so we can follow the same storm with time. And
yes.
It'll show us the track and movement. It's just a random number given by the software based on the number of storms on that day.
Oh, I see. Okay. It looked like there was some sort of a pattern to them, but there were some interruptions in that pattern that didn't make... That didn't come out clearly. So, anyway, well, that answers that question.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for confusing the show, Rich. I appreciate it very much. Are you finished?
I was looking for some clarity. And
All right. Well, we're off to the... It's like doing a show with you. We end up... hey, Rich, thanks a lot.
Okay, then. Good day.
We'll see you when you're on next. Let's go to Mark in Salem. Mark, you're on.
Thank you. I took 41 hours of graduate work in meteorology back in the... late 70s, Dr. Vonnegut, Bernie Vonnegut was one of my professors. I don't know if this gentleman knew Bernie Vonnegut, but he was Kurt Vonnegut's brother, and I studied atmospheric electricity in his course. I have a quick story to tell you, and then I have a comment to make afterwards. When I was a little kid, and I'm talking about, I'm 62, so I would have been about eight. It was before the North Wave went in. My father had gotten permission to transplant trees, and we were doing that in the springtime. And I looked to the north, and it was a bank of stratus clouds, quite heavy. And the sun was shining on our side of the road, and it wasn't on the other side of the road. And suddenly I noticed that the wind was beginning to take on a circular motion, and it got bigger and bigger and crossed the road and turned black. And this thing was probably 300 feet high and maybe, 30 feet, 20 feet across at the bottom. And I kept trying to tell my father, Dad, look, look. And he says, I'm busy with a tree. And then he finally turns and, oh, my God. It threw a pitchfork up in the air, dumped over a wheelbarrow full of dirt, went across to the neighbor's driveway, picked up a 6x6-foot sandbox full of sand and dumped it upside down. The neighbors were running for their house, and the littlest one got picked right off his feet and up into the air. And the woman of the house had her dress up around her head, and it hit their doghouse and blew it to a bazillion pieces.
Okay.
And finally hit a tree, and that was the end of it. So it was a what would be classified as some kind of a dust devil, I would think. But Bernie often told me I should write that a story up and send it in the WeatherWise, because it was the largest dust devil I'd ever seen, and it was just, and it reminded me because we had just seen The Wizard of Oz the week before, and I was terrified of storms after that.
Wow.
But okay, my comment is that in a disaster, most people, the biggest problem is getting water, and most people are on their own pumps, and they can't get electricity to the pumps. And I don't know how many people don't realize, but if you get a short length of garden hose and attach it to the bottom of your hot water heater, you have anywhere between 30 and 80 gallons of clean, potable water that you can use for flushing toilets or cooking with or washing your hands and
okay.
that kind of thing. Because most people don't realize that there's a drain on the bottom of the tank. And that's something that I think that in a disaster or in a whether it be caused by power outage or thunderstorm or whatever, that water is always available to you.
Okay.
So that was my comment.
Well, thanks, Mark.
But that tornado has stuck in my mind. I call it a tornado because it was looked just like a twister to me.
Yeah.
It was probably one of the more frightening things I'd seen, because especially after The Wizard of Oz.
That's frightened a lot of us.
Yeah. Okay. That was it.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
So... Dust devils. All right. There was a tragic story, I think, within the past week of a parachutist, I think, on Long Island,
yes.
who was caught, I believe, in a dust devil. So what's the difference? And it's just an order of magnitude. There's an EF0 tornado, and the dust devil is just down the list?
Well, most traditional tornadoes come from a thunderstorm that has a rotating updraft.
Yeah.
And then it builds down toward the ground, touches down, and does its damage. A dust devil comes from the ground up.
Oh, really?
Very warm air near the ground, colder air aloft.
So they really are different animals.
Yes. You just get an eddy in the wind that spins up, and then it, because of the difference between the ground and the near the surface, the temperature difference, and the air aloft, it can, you know, the updraft starts to spin. But it's mainly, they can be very powerful. We've heard of golf carts flipped over.
So what's the highest wind speed that you can get in a dust devil that you've seen?
I'm not sure, but we've heard about damage to small sheds, golf carts flipped over, things like that. So, you know, relatively strong.
So when a tornado comes in, it is cooler. It's an inversion? It's warmer air above and cooler air below?
No, not necessarily. But dust devil usually forms in clear skies as well. That's the other thing. You don't usually have cloudy weather. It's usually clear skies. I've seen them in the wintertime. I've seen white dust devils that have formed on a parking lot. One time I was ice fishing, and there was a state park, and there was a parking lot. It formed over the parking lot and moved out over the lake and picked up the snow, and it turned white.
But I thought you said it needed warm air.
Well, the parking lot was warm. The air, it was like 10 degrees outside. It was very cold, but the blacktop had heated up.
So it's the differential?
It's the differential. And again, dust devils usually form under clear skies. The ground gets very warm, and just above that, it's cold.
We are joined today by meteorologist Steve DiRienzo, and the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Lee in Ulster. Hi, Lee. You're on.
Hey, I have one of those kind of questions. Is there an opinion about the fact that we have so much more sensitive monitoring systems now that we get so many more warnings? I can't tell you how many warnings I have listened to that didn't turn out to be big events. That part of the perception of the way the weather's changing is the fact that we're listening to so much more of the warning system stuff on the radio?
Great question.
Well, we do issue a lot of warnings. We issue, obviously, in the summertime, flash flood warnings, severe thunderstorm warnings, tornado warnings. So there are quite a few warnings that go out. You know, you can still have river flood warnings. So part of it's that. Part of it, I think we've been in a very wet cycle the last 10 years or so. And we've had quite a few tropical storms come through, even the weaker ones, leaving out Irene and Sandy. There were some weaker ones during the decade of, you know, the early 2000s that there were a lot of warnings issued. So.
Okay. Lee, great question.
Thanks.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551. It is hurricane season. Hurricane season is July through November?
June. Yeah. Starts in June. I think June 1st till the end of November.
Okay.
And there's a seasonal outlook that's done by NOAA and the National Hurricane Center, which will be updated this week, believe it, August 7th. They'll put an update out, I think, sometime in the late morning, early afternoon, there will be an update issued. Right now, they're calling for near to slightly below normal.
So we've had two, Bertha and Arthur?
Hurricanes so far.
Bertha's now a tropical storm.
Yes.
Okay, so it seems like there haven't, since the horrors of Sandy, it's been fairly quiet.
Last year was a very quiet year, and it was predicted to be well above normal, and it turned out just the opposite. It was well below normal.
So how do they make that prediction? They say things are hotter, and there are more convection currents, and this season's going to be worse?
Well, part of its predictors, they look at, you know, past seasons, and they look at things they've used. There's a lot of things they look at, probably 15 to 20 different things, statistical things they're looking at. They also look at long-range climate models. The models are sophisticated enough to generate storms, and they'll see how many storms the models are generating.
But they're not always
future.
That accurate.
No. And there are things that happen. They can expect something to happen, such as the ocean to warm up more than normal. And if it stays cold and the storms don't develop, the storms, again, need the warm water for fuel. So
it is Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined by meteorologist Steve DiRienzo, and your calls at 1-800-348-2551. Fran in Del Mar. Fran, you're up.
Hi. I have a question about the TV weather forecasters. I lived for many years in Maine. And I never heard the forecasters up there say something like 20% chance of rain or 30%. And the weather forecasters here, I hear them say that frequently. And I was just wondering if that's just a personal choice with the weather forecasters, or is there something different in the weather down here?
I'm not sure. I mean, you'd probably have to talk to them. I know we use the National Weather Service uses probabilistic forecasts, so we talk about the 20% chance of rain. Why the TV meteorologists do it, I'm not sure.
Probably for the same reason. Now, were you in Maine long ago? I mean, maybe this is something that has just changed over the years.
No, I just moved back last fall. I lived there for about 25 years.
Interesting.
I grew up in Del Mar, and I just moved back last year.
Well, welcome back to the region, Fran.
Thank you.
Great question, though. And, you know, it's kind of silly, 20% chance of rain, because if there's a shower over you, it's 100% chance. So 20% chance over how big of a region, I think, is the question. But well, go ahead.
No, the probability is probably the least understood thing as far as when you say 20% chance of rain, what does that mean?
Do you want to explain it?
I'm not sure I could.
Okay.
That everybody would understand it.
All right. So. Well, then let's go back to the phones. Jack in Richmond, Mass. Jack, you're on.
Yeah, I got a question about your area forecast discussions that you issue periodically on the Internet.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, why is it with almost all of them, you issue it like two or three times in a row? With absolutely no changes, you know, same time, same date, same data, three, sometimes even four times.
We're usually updating bits and pieces of it. Like we may update the aviation discussion, and then it'll just get sent out. As soon as we're done updating that, we may update the hydrology section. We may update just the near-term forecast, you know, the first 6 to 12 hours of the forecast. It depends. I mean, as bits and pieces of the discussion are put together, maybe different people working on it as well, three or four people working on the discussion.
No, that's not what's happening. What's happening is the exact same area forecast discussion, same time, exact same data, because there's a feature on the Internet where you can highlight any changed areas, and absolutely no changes. Then you have like three in a row, all the same. And that kind of limits the amount of archival information you can retrieve, because you can go back 50 area forecast discussions. But if, you know, every three are the same, that only brings you back to maybe effectively about 17.
That sounds like a software problem. I'll take that back to our
Oh, good. He's making a note.
I'm making a note, so we'll see. I've never seen that, but you say it's happening.
Oh, yeah, take a look.
Okay.
Jack, you're affecting change. Way to go. Thanks for the call.
You're welcome.
Have a good one. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Hello, Lynn.
Are you there, Lynn? Lynn is not there. Going once, Lynn. Hello, is anybody there? All right, goodbye. Nicholas in New Braintree, Mass. Nicholas, you're on.
Hello. I want to say I love the area forecasts. I just think they're the forecast discussions. I think they're terrific, and I would hate to see them go. They're just terrific. I have a question about tornado warnings. The instructions about what to do when you see a tornado are, for the most part, absurd, and I don't think anybody probably has ever obeyed them. We were in a situation in which I thought we saw a tornado out in on the plains, and I looked over in the ditch, which is where it told me to go, and the ditch was full of ice water. We would have died of exposure in that ditch. So I'm wondering about, I'm asking you a very direct question, what would you do if you saw a tornado and you were in your car and you're out on the plains or you're out on the New York Thruway? What would you do?
All right.
Well, that's a good question. It depends on which way the tornado is moving and which way I'm going, because you can certainly, if it's possible to turn around and head opposite, you know, away from the tornado, probably the best thing to do is figure out which way the tornado is moving. If it's moving left to right, you want to move perpendicular to it. So if it's moving west to east, you want to move south to get away from it. You know, there's no perfect rules of thumb because they do change direction.
Okay, but so in the last tornado warning you gave from Massachusetts, the instructions were do not look for a tornado, but go immediately to your basement. And that was for an area several towns wide. Did you really expect that people would do that?
Well, you know, I see all the time on the news and on the Weather Channel, people love to take video of tornadoes, and they put themselves in great danger doing that. I'm not recommending that you put yourself in great danger. I'd rather you be safe. So we do expect people go to their basement, wait till it's done. You're only going to be there for 15 or 20 minutes. You ought to be able to handle that and then, you know, come out when it's safe to do.
Nicholas, so hard-hitting 60 minutes-like questions. Way to go there and make our guests squirm. All right, so tornadoes. The sort of folk wisdom, I was always told, if there's a tornado, you want to crack some windows because the pressure is so low out there that it'll blow your windows out. Not true. You're shaking your head.
Not true. No, what most of the damage that's caused by a tornado is from debris in the air. So if there's pieces of wood, anything that's been come off, you know, trees or broken off houses in the past, anything that's swirling in the wind will hit your house and cause damage. Also, if the windows are open, air pressure can get inside your house and blow it up literally like a balloon. It'll just puff up and pop the roof off, and then the house will collapse. And that's much more likely with the windows open than with the windows
really?
Closed. And we've seen it a couple times in the last couple of years with tornadoes where we've had doors get pushed in, and the wind gets inside a building, and it's pushed the roof up.
Oh.
You know, the peaks split open, or parts of the roof have lifted off or been torn off, or the walls blown out of buildings because the wind actually got inside the building. So you're much better with the windows and doors closed.
So then in that situation, it is not a question of air pressure. Air pressure is low, though, correct?
Yes, you do see a drop in pressure as the storm passes by, but that's not going to do the damage. It's the debris and the wind getting inside. We see it all the time with barns because barns usually have loosely fitting doors.
Yeah.
Wind gets inside the barn and peels back the aluminum roof or the shingled roof on the barn.
Fascinating stuff from Steve DiRienzo. He's National Weather Service Warning Coordination Meteorologist. He joins us on Vox Pop today, and we will take more calls and questions with Steve. Hey, turn that off. Whatever you were listening to was not the right thing. That was me recorded. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Just pick any old song, Zach, and we'll move it along here. And we'll take a break, and we'll be with underwriting. And hello, Zach. You can just play the underwriting. Yeah, just play the underwriting.
Support for WAMC goes on Washington County Tourism, announcing the Washington County Fair August 18th through the 24th, spotlighting the county's agricultural heritage with exhibits, farm museum, and more. WashingtonNYCounty.com. The Pirates Lakeside Grill on Nassau Lake, local organic grass-fed beef burgers, Milwaukee hot dogs, bison, and fish fry, open Thursday through Sunday, noon to 8 p.m., PiratesLakesideGrill.com. United Way of the Greater Capital Region, Albany, working to create opportunities in education, financial stability, and health in the community. Live United, give, advocate, volunteer, UnitedWayGCR.org. Lennox Plastic Surgery and Skin Center of BMC, plastic reconstructive and hand surgery, and laser skin treatments by Dr. Rodrigo Santamarina, BerkshireHealthSystems.org. And Capital Power, Albany, New York, dealer and installer of Kohler standby generator systems, CapitalStandbyPower.com.
Some lovely music, Zach. Way to go. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Yeah, it's, well, you know, every now and then the computer sort of hiccups. I'm sure you have this problem, Steve, at the National Weather Service. Sometimes there's a computer glitch, right?
Yes, that's why we have electronic system analysts and information technology guys who can handle fixing things.
Getting back to our last caller, you said to me in the break, you really recommend getting into a basement as fast as possible in a tornado.
Right, because oftentimes, tornado moves very fast. You may only have, you know, we try and get lead time, get the warning out before the tornado's occurring. That doesn't always happen, and they move very fast. They can do a lot of damage. We saw a house almost completely destroyed and was completely destroyed in Schenectady County this year. You don't have a lot of time. The best thing to do is take action, be safe now, and then
tell me about the EF scale. So the EF scale, EF zero near Boston, in the past week or so.
I think that was an EF2.
Was it an EF2?
Yes.
So there was an EF0 somewhere. Maybe it was
Dalton.
Okay.
Dalton, Massachusetts.
So tell me how that scale works.
Well, the original scale was called the F scale, and a doctor, a professor of meteorology, Fujita, had developed that scale. But he had used a lot of estimations as far as the wind speeds.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, it became the EF scale after they had done, there was a lot of wind tunnel studies done, and other engineers had done studies based on building design, building strength, and they actually changed the wind speed in the scale.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually the wind speeds of the different F ratings between 0 and 5 are actually different than they used to be.
So these are based on wind speed. It's not a question of energy as it is in an earthquake where it's exponential the next Richter scale point is exponential?
It's based on wind speed, and we use damage indicators based on wind tunnel studies and other engineering studies. We look at the damage, and that indicates a wind speed based on previous studies.
In the far future, when presumably architecture and engineering is far improved and there is less damage from 99% of the buildings, will that damage scale be slid?
I think since it's based on wind speed now, I'm not sure. That's a good question. I don't know that there will always be some damage. I mean,
all right, so. Enough of my pie in the sky questions. Bill and Beacon. Bill, you're on.
A few years back, I was reading some data about the Gulf Stream slowing down, and the theory basically that because the ice caps are receding, the current doesn't hit them and sink and sort of run that current generator. Do you have any data on what the Gulf Stream's doing, or do you have any thoughts on how that's impacting, you know, global weather?
I haven't seen any published studies that the Gulf Stream has actually changed, you know, in speed or width or direction. I know there were a lot of theories years ago that if the polar ice caps started to melt, that they'd send a flood of cold water. In some cases, they sent a flood of cold water south and pushed the Gulf Stream further south. But I haven't seen anything to indicate that it's changed at all. So.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. Let's go to Lynn in Shelburne. Lynn, you're on.
Yes, you hear me now?
Yes. Hello.
Hello, Ray. And by the way, your insights are not whatever you call them.
Pie in the sky?
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. National Weather Service.
That's Steve. Steve DiRienzo.
You're welcome.
Steve DiRienzo. I feel so blessed here in my little hamlet in western Massachusetts that I haven't gotten any of this weather. And maybe it's just sensationalism, but you don't think there's any overall change in the weather at all?
No, I think the weather changes all the time. I think climate change is normal. If you look back...
Over the last 40 years?
What's that?
Over the last 40 years, maybe.
Well, we have, as I mentioned earlier, we have records that go back to the early 1800s for Albany. Huh. And if you look at our records, there have been all kinds of cycles. Like I said, if you look at a century basis, the 1800s were very wet, the 1900s were dry, and since about 2000, we've gotten wet again. You see changes in temperature, you see changes in precipitation. Snowfall is amazing. If you lived in Albany between 1910 and 1940, Albany averaged about 43 inches of snow per year. If you lived here between 1960 and 1990, Albany averaged about 65 inches of snow per year. So
yeah,
we see changes all the time. I think it's totally normal, and to think otherwise, I think, is kind of hiding from the amount of change that can occur.
Well, I know Europe had a lot of droughts or a drought over there that was horrible, but I don't know. It's not sensationalism. It is sensationalism that they're bringing up all the time. They say that Australia has the hottest winter in record.
The last I heard, Australia was getting a lot of snow this winter, but I don't know.
Interesting.
Oh, this is the worst winter in record.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. I'm sorry to.
It's all right, Lynn. Hey, thanks a lot for
the call. No, it's fine.
Hey,
I know. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Snowfall, you mentioned it. I grew up in this region in the 70s. And boy, it seemed to me as a little kid, we got buried with snow. And it seems to me that in the last couple of years, we're getting buried with snow again. Am I hallucinating?
We had a very snowy winter this year. I don't remember where exactly it fell, but certainly it was above normal snowfall. But if you look at over time, the average snowfall, the Weather Service and NOAA use 30-year climate normals.
Mm-hmm.
Again, those 30-year normals have changed from as low as 43 inches per year to as high as 65 inches per year. So there's a cycle. So we're coming down off the top, which was around 1970, was around the snowiest time, the early
70s. It was bad. I remember it up. You know, when you're a kid and then you go through the decades, as far as I remember, it was up to the top windows of our house, of course. Let's go to Russ in Waterford. Russ, you're on.
Hi. Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was listening to that story. I was kind of humored. I have a comment and a couple of quick questions. I personally, you were talking about people taking pictures on their phone and stuff of weather. I never understood why these guys from the Weather Channel want to stand out in the middle of a hurricane, or they show flooding while they're standing in waders. I don't understand for the life of me why they do that. I don't think it lends anything to the story whatsoever. You have any thoughts on why they do that?
Ratings.
Oh.
Is that what it is?
Zing. Ouch.
That's my guess. I In some cases, it's probably not safe. In other cases, I think sometimes they embellish things a little bit. It may not be as bad as what it appears to be. But, I wouldn't do it. You're better off being safe.
Okay, two quick questions. I've always heard since I was a kid that people always say, well, it's so cold that it can't snow. I would want to know if that's true. And the second thing is, I've always heard that when the wind starts blowing in such a way that the leaves turn over on the trees, that it signifies that it's going to rain. Are those urban legends, or is there any truth to either one of them?
So cold that it can't snow. I believe if we had a day this past January where it was below zero and snowing here in Albany.
Have you ever been to Plattsburgh, Russ?
Right. Or Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah.
So, no. Well, or Saranac Lake or Lake Placid, New York. I mean, there are many days where it's, below zero.
But we've all
and
heard
snowing.
That. And it's just not
it's
true.
It's not true.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Where it comes from is that warm air holds more moisture than cold air. So the colder it is, the less moisture there is in the air. But if there's enough energy in the atmosphere, you can squeeze out what little water there is and make snow. So it's possible.
Okay.
And the one about the leaves, I'm not sure. I haven't heard that myself.
What about cows lying down?
I've heard that. I used to work on farms as a kid, and I've heard that. But I've seen times where they're laying down and times where they're standing up. So I don't know.
All right. So they're just lazy. Well,
see, my friends refer to me as the plethora of worthless knowledge, so now at least I know.
Hey, Russ.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Take any time. Appreciate the call. 1-800-348-2551. We had rain coming the other day, and the kids and I were driving and saw the cows lying down. So, therefore, based on one piece of evidence, I'm going to say that that's true.
Okay.
All right, let's go to Gary in Schenectady. Gary, you're up.
Yes, good afternoon, Ray and Steve. Great, great program. Thank you very much. Up until the last couple of callers, very little was said about cold weather. Of course, it's summer, and we're thinking about hot weather and tornadoes and stuff. But what I want to know, because I never heard any statistics on it after this winter was over with, we had, of course, the so-called polar vortex and some of the coldest weather I can remember during January, February, and March. Certainly my heating bills were twice what they usually are. But anyway, were any of those months or was the winter in general one of the 5 or 10 or 15 coldest on record?
I don't remember. You'd have to check with the weather office. I don't think we were in the top 20 or 25, believe it or not.
How far back do the records go?
Our temperature records, I believe, back to about 1826, I want to say.
Really?
So it was still cold.
I think the coldest winter, as far as temperature-wise, might have been the 19, or at least the coldest January, might have been the 1970-71 winter. And that one also was the snowiest winter. I think that was a rough one, but there have been other ones. I mean, they're all pretty close when you get to the top 5 or 10. So I think this year we're just outside. We might have been in the top 20 or 25, but I don't think we were in the top 10.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Gary, thanks a lot. The number to call, by the way, is 1-800-348-2551. We're joined by Steve DiRienzo today of the National Weather Service, having an interesting conversation about weather. So the polar vortex, we heard much, and it's funny how we in the media, you probably heard that phrase for a long, long time. We sort of just picked it up in the last year or two in the media, and it's all over the place. So I heard the polar vortex made another appearance not too long ago, or at least was that circulation of wind was coming back down in the summer, and it's been keeping things cool over the last week or two. True or not true?
It has helped keep things cool this summer across the northern tier of states. The polar vortex is usually used to describe the point of the or the area of the lowest temperatures across the Arctic region. There's usually an area of very, very cold air, and it migrates around the northern hemisphere, and sometimes it dips into the middle latitudes. This wasn't the first time this ever happened. Obviously, there have been years where it's almost been anchored over us, where we've had bitter cold for months, and there's been years where it never comes down. So this year it happened to come, and somebody, probably a weather forecaster, used it in a forecast discussion, and somebody picked up that term and just threw it out there, or the Weather Channel threw it out there, and all of a sudden it took on a life of its own. We have guys in our office who, if you say that, they'll punch you because they're so sick of hearing it.
Ah, yes. Well, it gives us in the media something to talk about, and we can always use that. Jack in Rensselaerville. Jack, you're on.
Yes. A caller earlier said if there was a power shortage and a pump system, they could get water from their hot water tank. If they were to do that and the electricity came back on, the elements would burn out.
Ah.
So they should if they do that, they should shut off the breaker before they drain anything out of the water tank, and they should have to admit air somehow to the hot water system by turning on a hot water valve, and then it'll work.
That's a good point. Thank you.
If they burn up the elements, it's quite expensive to have it repaired.
So I guess if it's a situation where you think the power is going to be out for several weeks, it might be a worthy thing to think
about. Even not, if they drain the water at any point from the tank and there's if there's no electricity when the power comes on, it'll burn up.
Yeah.
If there's no water in the tank, it'll burn up the elements.
Okay.
So
thanks,
it's a simple
Jack.
Thing to just turn off the breaker.
Have you had to do this?
No, but I know that has happened.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, Jack. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Ayla in Saugerties. I hope I said your name right.
Ayla. It's Ayla.
Ayla, how are you?
Fine, thanks. But listen, I wanted to ask them that it's been widely reported that the water temperature of the ocean has been steadily rising for some time now, and would they consider that to be a sign for increased hurricanes in the future and now?
If the ocean temperature continually warmed, especially in what we call the hurricane formation region, which is between Africa and the Caribbean in the South Atlantic, at least for the hurricanes for our area, mm-hmm. yes, that would provide for more hurricanes. It seems like it varies every year, but that's only part of the story, too. I mean, the ocean temperature, some years are warmer and some years they're cooler. We haven't seen, like, a steady rise.
Well, I understand there has been a steady rise.
Maybe overall, if you look at the oceans as a whole, but in that hurricane formation region, there are other things that become involved. Changes in wind direction can cool off the water enough during the hurricane season where you don't get a lot of hurricanes. But it's not only the water temperature, it also has to do with the upper-level winds. When the hurricanes don't like a lot of wind in the upper atmosphere, it tends to shear the thunderstorms apart that generate the energy for the hurricane itself. So as the hurricane comes across the ocean, it wants light winds in the upper atmosphere. And last summer, for instance, we had strong winds across the Atlantic all summer, and there were very few hurricanes. So there are many factors that go into it. If the ocean were just steadily increasing, very, very warm, there probably would be a lot more hurricanes. But changes in wind speed and direction, even things like African dust can affect hurricane formation. And those hurricanes start sometimes all the way near the coast of Africa and come all the way across the Atlantic. So mm-hmm. there's more
and
to
the
it.
And the typhoon is essentially a hurricane on the other side, on the eastern part of the world, is that correct?
That's correct, over toward Japan.
So is it just nomenclature?
It is nomenclature. They're all cyclones. They call them cyclones, I believe, near Australia. They're typhoons when you get close to Japan and Taiwan and places like that. We call them hurricanes.
So a hurricane is a cyclone, is a typhoon?
Yes.
So I saw on the news this morning there is one, two, or three headed toward Hawaii or in the region of Hawaii. One of them has a perfect eye, so I assume that is a hurricane in the South Pacific?
I think east of the dateline, they're still hurricanes. I believe that's still a hurricane. When you get west of the dateline, it becomes a typhoon.
Okay.
So there are a couple hurricanes in the eastern Pacific that are heading west, and one was within 500 to 800 miles of Hawaii, and I think it was expected to hit Hawaii, but it's encountering some colder water, and they expected it to weaken over the next few days.
Okay, so that's good news. Quickly, we'll go to Stuart in Poughkeepsie. Stuart, I'm sorry, you only have about 30 seconds to pose a question here.
Okay, great. Thank you. I'm sitting here listening to you talk about the weather and the variability and how much it does change all the time, but I'm also sitting here reading the IPCC report on climate change. And it seems like the science behind climate change is really strong, and it comes from a lot of fields other than just of weather. You know, it seems like the ecologists are seeing habitat change and things like that.
Okay.
So how do you put these things together? I mean, how do you talk about, you know, the weather that is so variable and yet climate that does seem to be changing?
Stuart, that's a great way to end the show, and you have about 15 seconds here, Professor.
Well, you know, I'm not going to doubt the IPCC report is put together by a lot of scientists. There are lots of, you know, important pieces of research that were used to put that together. There are lots of studies that continually go on. I think it just remains to be seen what actually happens. We'll see what happens over the next, you know, 15, 20 to 100 years and find out how accurate the predictions were.
Well, Steve, thank you for being with us today. What is the website for you guys?
Weather.gov/Albany.
And it's an exciting place to be, especially in the summertime, right around this time in the afternoon. I know you got to get back to work. Thanks for being here. Thanks to everybody who called in today. Support comes from Sheehy Opticians, Albany, New York, providing eyeglasses, contact lenses, and eye exams since 1953, sheehyopticians.com. Country Curtains at the Red Lion Inn, Stockbridge, Massachusetts, offering ready-made window treatments for over 50 years, countrycurtains.com. The Unitarian Universalist congregations in the Capital Region and beyond, where people gather together to nurture spirit and help heal the world, offering religious education and child care, CapitalRegionUU.org. At Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York, since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet, MannixMarketing.com. Thanks to the great Zach Malloy for handling the controls. Bruce Herbach answered the phones. Thanks again to our guest, Steve DiRienzo. And, boy, thanks, everybody, for calling in today. Thanks to Jessica Blaustein Marshall, our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, Ward Stone is back to talk about what's over there in the backyard.